This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 688, brought to you by Harry's. Make sure you go to harrys.com/iFanboy to redeem your offer for a trial shave set. And iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 688 miles per hour. Can't hear that number without thinking that.
Sure. Some serious shit.
I'm Connor Kilpatrick. This is Josh Flanagan. And we are iFanboy. And every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks our favorite book. We call it the Pick of the Week. We talk about that book, other books we read, the listener mail, the patron pick, the patron powers, all the fun stuff we do every week. And we have a good time because that's what the whole deal is. That's why we're here. And here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll be some spoilers. Josh, you had the pick on a very weird but also heavy week.
Weird week.
Yeah.
Yeah, and heavy. Weird and heavy.
Heavy, much like the future.
Yeah. I can't think of Christopher Lloyd without making the Jim Gutowski sound.
I didn't mean, you know, because heavy is a common phrase. If it was a heavy week of comics. I had a lot of books, but it was also, you know.
Is there something about comics that is affecting the Earth's gravitational pull?
Yes. There's too many of them.
Double shipping specifically.
Double shipping has done it. It's gonna kill us all.
Yeah. So the pick of the week is Superman Year One, Book One, by Frank Miller and John Romita Jr. And you might be listening to this going, "What?" or perhaps that I have some splaining to do.
Mm-hmm. Is this your first Black Label book? You didn't read the Azzarello Batman one.
No, I didn't. Okay. So it might be.
It's sort of irrelevant. What's worth mentioning, this is a DC Black Label book, which means it's a prestige book by prestige creators, and for all intents and purposes, it's an Elseworlds.
And judging by the aspect ratio on my digital reader, is it magazine size?
I guess.
Seems like it's – yeah, it looks like it's a different like Golden Age size.
It's definitely not regular comic aspect ratio.
Yeah. So you might be asking yourself, really? Why? And it's a multifaceted answer. I have noticed in my time here at iFanboy, where we talk and think and read a lot about comic books. Well, there has been a real backlash against Frank Miller.
Absolutely. Not unjustified at times.
No, definitely not fully unjustified. I think that it started around Dark Knight Returns 2.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A lot of people didn't like it. You don't like it. I've gone back and read it again, and I don't think it's the best thing ever happened, but I think that it's better than the initial assessment of it by a lot of people. There's definitely things that are interesting in there. And then there was Batman Holy Terror, which just became the Holy Terror, and that had issues. And it's a whole complicated thing. But suffice to say, the point being – and then there was All-Star Batman, where I think one line – yeah. One bit of dialogue undercut everything, and that's all I ever heard about it or knew anything about
it. Well, that was a complicated book itself. But I think, I mean, we're not This is not a dissertation on Frank Miller. And we just, well, so we spent an hour talking about him on a Booksplode and how great he was. And he's a legitimate, he's legitimately one of the most important people to ever make comic books, no matter what you think of his current work.
Exactly.
I think the disappointment sprang, and I was one of those people disappointed in The Dark Knight Strikes Back, is that it wasn't like his old work, and he has grown and changed as an artist, and that can be frustrating for the audience who just wants him to be like he was, at least when you return to a seminal story.
Make me feel the way you made me feel before. That's what people really mean.
Yes and no. I mean, when he continued the story like The Dark Knight Returns, he continued it in a way that didn't feel like it was part of the old work, and that was my disconnect from it.
Yeah.
I liked All-Star Batman and Robin because it felt like it was Sin City Batman, and I liked...
Well, right. So, and the point being, I think that, you know, I don't know anything about All-Star Batman and Robin. I didn't read it because I don't like Jim Lee.
Right.
And then all I know is that everybody said, I'm the goddamn Batman. And that was the reason, that was the most reasoning I had for anything. And it was, well, this isn't Batman, which is a bullshit argument in any form.
Right.
This isn't Batman. I can like it or not, but there's a lot of things that are and aren't. There are more things that are Batman than aren't because mm-hmm. he's a fictional character that is super malleable. Anyway, he shows up and he's doing this, he's going to tell the origin of Superman, which is the superhero, the sort of, you know, he's the seed from which all of this other industry and the stuff that we talk about all the time springs from. And I thought, well, you know, what kind of comics historian, thinker, you know, analyzer would I be if I didn't actually want to see, well, what does Frank Miller have to say about Superman at this point in time?
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got John Romita Jr. Drawing it. I can't think of the last thing I read by him.
I don't know, but he is one of the all-time great superhero artists.
Yes. And also a really good match for Frank Miller, might be said. Like, it's actually, I don't think I've ever sort of put the parallels of their two art styles together, but there's something there. So when I read the book, I read it with an open mind and a grain of salt, and I thought, well, I just want to see what he has to say.
And before you delve into that, though, I mean, I think part of the... And I had no expectation either way. I think there's a lot of people out there who came into this with like their knives sharpened, and they were excited to carve Frank Miller up.
And that's what I'm talking about.
I don't ever go into anything like that, at least usually. That I can think of, because usually. But like, life's too short. There's a lot of things out there, and if I'm looking to hate something, I'll just not read it. For the most part, I was ambivalent. Like, I was like, okay, well, let's see what it is. But I wasn't excited. I wasn't dreading it. The only thing I think a lot of people were concerned about is that in The Dark Knight Returns, Superman is basically the bad guy. And some people just don't have an affinity for Superman. You know, if you're a very cynical person, you tend to not have an affinity for Superman. So I think the fear was from a lot of people that Frank Miller was too dark and cynical and edgy for Superman. And I think that was part of the anxiety going in.
Sure. But all that's what was sort of interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so when I'm talking about this book that I read a whole crap ton of books this week, and I don't know that I'm necessarily going to sit here and tell you that this book was the best one, but it was the one that I was the most interested in and sure. I was paying the most attention to. It was the most thought-provoking because of everything you just said, because of all the history that is involved with the creator, and not to some small part, probably because we just spent so much time talking about Daredevil Born Again, and I just was like, well, I want to see if I can still get that feeling or something like that feeling.
I saved it for last. My most anticipated book.
Yeah. I didn't realize it was going to be a billion pages long. But even so, that wasn't even quickly.
It moved very quickly.
It was smoothly. You know, and the fact is, it wasn't all that different, you know, than your typical sort of Superman origin story, except we spent a lot of time zooming in, I think, on what it feels like. We spent a lot of time examining... So much of Superman is always done in terms of his goodness and his rightness and his fortitude and his willingness to do the right thing. And this was a lot more about like, well, where does his ego come into this? Where does, you know, he's a good person in this, but he's not 100% good from jump. Not that he's bad, but there's bits where you're like, well, where are we going with this? Are you going to make a bad decision here? Are you not? And so this is also deeply tied in with superheroics, but like also just high school in a small town, high school in a small town in a different time. Mm-hmm. The fact that it felt like a comic book that was straddling a couple or a few eras, I thought was really interesting, because then the other hand is that so many of the comics that we read today are directly influenced by writers who grew up reading Frank Miller and what came after him.
Yep.
And this is a person who, there's another comic book, I think, when we talk about our patron pick this week, I think this is also an element. The person making it, and actually the person drawing it, the person writing it and the person drawing it, are both of a different, completely different era in comic books. Mm-hmm. And their influences are going to be different. And I think that for far too long, myself included, but a lot of people go, oh, that's old. I don't want it. That's a black and white movie. That's whatever. You know, and I've been like that in the past, and it was stupid. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting to me to see, like, well, what do you have to say about this point? Frank Miller's gone through some shit.
Yeah.
Like, I think he was profoundly unhealthy for a long time. His career changed. What people thought of him changed. The most lauded person in comic books to then being one of the most vilified people in comic books. What's he going to say about Superman? And is it even going to be terribly deep? You know, is it going to have any subtext, or is it just like, nah, I think I'm writing this kind of Superman story right now? And I think that's what happened. And I found that really interesting, and I found it compelling. And I had a conversation with a friend of mine who sort of more of a former comics pro, but he was like, I don't like the idea. At the end of it, basically, Superman joins the Navy or joins the military, and that's like the last thing we see.
Yeah.
And he was like, that's dumb. And I was like, how do we know? Like, I haven't read it.
We haven't
like,
seen it yet, yeah.
And also, it completely tracks with the story that was being told, you know, in the book.
It worked in the context of what he was told to do with his life.
And it, to me, doesn't seem entirely un-Superman to me in sort of what I think of Superman. So all that stuff together, you know, some of the teenage hormone stuff, how dealing with bullies, dealing with, you know, like, I can crush these people, but should I, you know,
right. What's
the right thing to do here? That moral quandary of it all. Superman of today in our comic books that we're reading now, who does always make the right decisions for the most part, who knows to do the right thing, who has the right patience with difference. Like, he had to go through a thought process to get there. And that's what this book is, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a different. First of all, it starts with the Krypton exploding rocket ship leaving situation. And then it ends with him going off to not college, but to the Navy. So it's his high school years. And so in that sense, I found myself saying, well, wait, this isn't Superman Year One. This is Superman's secret origin. This is an origin story. It's not
sure.
Year One stories are specifically the first year of their superheroing life and the challenges of that. So this is slightly poorly named. I mean, I get why they wanted to name it.
To be fair, he came up with the name Year One.
it's become a DC brand since then, and it's not exactly accurate.
Sure.
But also, it's just another Superman origin story. There's been many, you know.
Yeah.
Man of Steel and Birthright and Secret Origins by Geoff Johns. I mean, there's been many of them. And this is just another take on it. I don't think it's worth getting worked up about. It's just another Superman origin story. There's been a lot of them. There'll be more of them. It was weird. I actually found myself enjoying it, but it had a lot of things that it did that I didn't love, but it had a lot of things that it did that I did love.
Yeah.
And so when I finished it, I thought, yeah, I liked it. But, you know, I don't know what to make of it.
And I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think it looked great. I thought the art and the colors were gorgeous.
I don't love Alex Sinclair in colors. I don't think he's bad. It just has – it reminds me of a certain kind of comic book, and I think I would have liked this to have a different – I mean, whenever I see Frank Miller writing something, I want it to look like – I want it to make it feel like it used to. I want it to have the Lynn Varley colors. I want it to be flatter. I don't – I'm a little scarred by having sort of textures in the color put in on a Frank Miller book, even though it's Romita. It's just that, you know, the lens flare and the sort of gradients and things I don't love. But he's a good colorist. It's just
that
taste thing.
To me, I mean, there were problems with, I thought, Clark seems way too sentient from the very beginning. Like, he's a little too old. He's supposed to be a baby. He's more like a young kid. He seems to know he's from Krypton from the very beginning. You get less of a sense that he is sort of raised by the Kents than he's already been a Kryptonian the whole time.
I would counter that and then, like, I like that. I like that there's sort of an element to him, you know, having been good and then that was shaped by the Kents. And, you know, he's an alien. He's got superpowers. It doesn't entirely not track that even being in the yellow sun sort of kicks that up a notch a little earlier. Again, it's a choice. It's not a right wrong thing. And I think I found that interesting enough.
Yeah, it was interesting. And I didn't necessarily like that. I liked him and his dad a lot.
Yeah.
It's an important relationship that changes depending on the origin story, but you know it wasn't the Man of Steel movie or movie dad where he was like, fuck everybody, hide your powers, don't ever do anything with them. But he wasn't also like old man Pa Kent, who's like, you know, saint on earth. I liked him a lot. He had a little bit of an edge to him too. Like, he clearly wanted to beat up that guy's dad who was the bully.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Clark Kent as a misfit in the school with hanging out with all the weirdos and nerds.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting. Although, as great as Romita is as a superhero artist, I think it's well documented. He's got problems with kids, so I often lost track of how old Clark was supposed to be throughout the story.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of forgot he was in high school at one point because he still looked like he was 10. But I liked the relationships. I liked him and Lana. I didn't necessarily need the attempted rape scene by the bullies with Lana Lang in a Superman story.
I had the same thought. And also just it doesn't help the Frank Miller mythos.
Yes, but I liked most of it. I liked the beginning a lot. The middle had a little bit of problems, but once he sort of aged him up and he was flying, mm-hmm. I liked the scene the old man saw him flying, and dang, was that the Kent boy? Once he's like on the football team and then goes off to the Navy, actually I thought the ending was really good. I thought the ending was really strong. The whole sequence where he leaves, says goodbye to Lana.
See her on the roof.
Says goodbye to his family. They give him the cape. He sees her on the roof. That was terrific. The sort of the reaction of going to the naval base. I thought that was great. It's an interesting book.
Here's the, like, at the end of the day, and we're using this word interesting, which is such a shitty overused word, but really that's why I was here. Mm-hmm. That's why I read it. I wanted to know what it was going to be, and I expected, and I think it was delivered, that it was not the dumb stereotype of what people think that the guy is going to deliver.
No.
It was a different story. It was a Superman story. It was a take on it. It was a thing.
It's recognizable. It's not on Superman. It's very right. Superman. There's elements of it I don't necessarily think should be in there, but
sure.
That's his take on it. It's fine.
But it wasn't the one note grim and gritty thing that he started. You know, taking to Superman, which is the joke that people think that he is now.
And the central conflict of this issue is basically how to deal with bullies. Because for 90% of it, it's about him and his friends being bullied by the town, you know, bullies, the gang at school, and how to deal with them. He could pick them all up and crush their heads, but that's not the way the world should work. And his dad has that ongoing discussion. I thought that was interesting. I mean, that's an interesting story.
It really is.
You can't necessarily defeat him with words, but you also can't just kill them. So how do you get him to stop? The only negative I'd say was it kind of just goes away. Like once he saves Lana, they kind of just... never mentioned again.
Maybe the theme will come up in the future books.
I just mean, like, how did he deal with them? Because he had kind of tossed them like that before and didn't stop them from bullying him, so...
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Anyway, the point leading up to that was interesting. The discussion was interesting. The dilemma mm-hmm. was interesting. That's the ultimate Superman dilemma, is how do you deal with these people who are very fragile around you?
It's also a really different response to a lot of the stuff that I think got him in trouble, you know, where he's like, Batman would go over there and kill everybody. And it's not necessarily that I'm saying, well, now he's recanting that. He isn't necessary. It's not the same thing. But it's another line of thinking. And I like that flexibility of thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you get the idea that people, that you would think that this book would just be a hardliner. You know, and it isn't. And I like that it isn't. You know, the powerful person, great power comes great responsibility. I mean, it comes back to that in a certain way.
I mean, it also isn't a story about how Superman's outmoded. And how his values are out of touch. And I was a little surprised by how old-fashioned it was. And
yeah, I liked that.
I can't think of a more interesting book that's come out
in
a while. It's very interesting. And it's also interesting how a book this high profile has made me want to talk about it.
I wanted to read it, think about it, and talk about it. And I think it's valuable for that. So that's why we're doing it. That's why we're having
a very high level of craft.
Sure. I mean, absolutely. But also not the high level of craft that we come to associate with all modern books, which is sort of the point I was making. But, you know, because between Romita and Miller, those influences run a lot deeper and further back. So they're not necessarily going to be a modern style book, but it was a mix of those things.
And better written. I mean, I feel horrible saying it, but like, first of all, this is one of the best things Frank Miller's written in a while.
Yes.
By far, but also construction-wise and better written than most things I read this week. And I read a lot of comics this week.
Yeah, true. That's absolutely true.
When he's good, he's better at it than most everybody.
He should be.
Yeah.
I mean, that should be a foregone conclusion.
Obviously, some things aside, it wasn't perfect, but there were sequences where I was like, damn, this is really, really good. And other sequences weren't, and that's fine. But I was like, wow, that's really, really, really good.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to more, should more ever come out. I don't know that he has the best track record, and I don't know. Well, I mean, most of those Jim Lee, but also...
Romita's not Jim Lee.
But also,
he's going to get the work done.
I don't think the second or third issue of the Batman book ever came out either, so who knows?
Uh-huh.
but I'm looking forward to more. I'm looking forward to actually getting Superman. It is called Superman Year One, after all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Superman joining the military is strange on its surface, but it tracks. It tracks. And that's, I assume that's going to be a focus of the next issue. But this particular story made sense for the character and for the discussions he had with his father, that he would at least try that out.
Yeah, and which is also going to be very interesting in comparison to some of the stuff that Miller's done before that people didn't like. When people didn't like it, I didn't read it because I didn't want to. I knew I wasn't going to like it, and I didn't want to not like it. So I don't know anything about it. I just know what people have said about like Holy Terror or whatever it was.
And in a world where there are no superheroes, why would he suddenly become one? You know, What he would do would be, okay, well, where do you go if you are powerful and you want to help make the world a better place? Well, you go into law enforcement, but that's not global enough. You go into the military.
Yeah.
It makes sense in the world, in that particular world. Now, obviously, it's not going to be end up that way. He's going to end up wearing a suit and going to Metropolis. But the first step is, oh, maybe I should go do this. Oh, well, that's not the right answer. I'll go do something else. So mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
For this story.
I also do have to point out, I was probably more than rationally excited to see John Workman's name as lettering the book.
He's true.
I don't know what it is about him. I do. It's Simonson's Thor. I like his letters. And when I see he's doing a book, I'm like, oh, that's great. It's cool.
He's one of the great letterers.
Yes, he is. Absolutely. Are you still reading Middle West?
I am, yeah. I think it's one of the best looking books consistently in comics right now.
Yeah, not only that, the last two issues in particular, I think have been really strong.
Mm-hmm.
I've found them very honest and very real in a way that they're looking at anger
mm-hmm.
and relationships between parents and caregivers and what happens to other people when you get angry. So that, it's clear that the kid and his father get angry, and when they do that, it turns into a tornado. You know, it's a metaphor. It's a big twirling metaphor, but it works really well. In this one, basically, he comes down and they kick him out. You know, the one lady who sort of set this off is like, I can't do this to the rest of those people. And that is a moral gray area that is always an interesting place to be, where, you know, you're reading, like, is she right or is she wrong here?
Right.
And you don't know. It doesn't make her a good guy, a bad guy. Now we also got to spend time with the father, you know, who's out looking for his
son.
That was
the best part of the book, yeah.
Yeah, and there was a sort of bar fight that ensued and, you know, everything that happened in that. You know, then you've got, I don't know the fox's name. I don't even know what where the fox comes from or what the point of it is, but like he's the sort of driving force of trying to get the kid to do the right thing.
He's the fantasy guide character, you know?
Yeah,
Not the Yoda, but it's a fantasy story. It's a world of magic and
yeah, it
and
is. Things. Underneath that, though, is a real undercurrent of truth.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know exactly the specifics of, you know, what Scotty's trying to say here, but there's something real in there that I think is a real linchpin. It's a stake in the ground for the whole book. And then you're right. Like it's beautiful. It's, you know, it's the same thing. Like the art evokes Scotty. And every once in a while I think, oh yeah, Scott, this guy's not drawing this. Part of that is the colorist, Jean-François Bellieu, but it is all a piece. And then finally, I think I think I made this pick of the week on issue 6.
Yeah.
You know, since that time, this is probably the best thing that Scotty's ever written in terms of something I've really enjoyed reading. I think it's really pretty strong.
First of all, this is the first issue where I realized, okay, well, this isn't like an all-ages book. This is like the first time there's like cursing and penis talking.
No, Bully Wars is the all-ages book.
Could have been up until this point. It could have been an all-ages book about...
Yeah, he told me a while ago that like he was showing me the issue and I was like, it's for my kids? And he goes, no. So I kind of had that mind not to do that.
So it's a story about a kid who runs away from his dad and he ends up with the circus. And as Josh said, the circus kicked him out because he turned to a tornado and put people in danger. That was harrowing. But really, it's a very honest look at anger and abuse in a family. And that's what I think makes it special. And that sounds horrible to say it that way. But what I think the honesty of it makes it compelling is probably a better way to say it.
And the real feeling that a lot of people can relate to, I think, is I know where this anger comes from. It was there.
Yeah.
I don't want to turn into that, but it is part of me.
Right.
What do I do now? And that's amazing. That's really good writing.
And so you take the framework of a fantasy story with people turning into tornadoes and talking foxes and robots that build things at circuses, and you hang it on this emotional truth, and it makes it really compelling. Really compelling story. I think it's the best thing Scotty Young's ever written, for sure, by far. Yep. And Jorge Corona, who's the artist, is incredible.
Delightful.
Really, really good.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I'm reading it because it's really compelling.
There you go. Did you jump on War of the Realms after we talked about it last time? War of the Realms Journey into Mystery, number 5.
I have that particular issue. I just haven't read it yet.
That's fine.
So I didn't read this one.
So this wraps up this little mini series where they rescue the god baby from Ares and Surtur. And at the end of it, I was thinking, this is pretty delightful. I think it was a real fun story with a group of characters who I don't know very well. The wrap up and explanation of sort of what was going on was unexpected to me.
Mm-hmm.
The twist on the idea of Asgardians and basically Freya and Odin conceived the child in a place that was not Asgard. It was in, I guess, Muspelheim. So the baby was is part of all worlds, basically.
Mm.
You know, it's Asgardian, it's a bit demon. There's sort of a multiple thing going on. And because it is the daughter of Odin and Freya, the child is much, much more powerful than is necessarily apparent. And it worked. I think it worked really well. The wrap-up worked really well. I think for character stuff, this has been one of the best books in sort of convincing me that Kate Bishop is a good and interesting character and what they're deciding to do with her.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a bit where she sort of ad hoc leads the team, but because someone needed to. And I can't remember who the character is, but basically somebody said to her, you know, we were talking earlier how, you know, some people just aren't fit to be leaders. And they're like, you are. And it felt genuine. It felt real. And also it felt like a real nod to other Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
I always like the idea that you kind of knew with Clint Barton that when push came to shove and he had to step up, like he would be that leader, mm-hmm. which is what I think was fun about West Coast Avengers.
Yeah.
Although I don't know that I could have had that thought when I was a kid, but that was, you know, and then that was carried out again when he came into the Thunderbolt series where he became the leader of that team, where he still had the elements of being a little reckless, but he was trying to be a good leader. And then when he matures into it, he does. And she has that quality. And I think that is way more interesting than a lot of the other stuff that they've tried to write about her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes when you take a character who doesn't necessarily work as a younger character and you mature them a little bit, then all of a sudden it's fun because you've seen what's behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe someday they turn Damian into a really interesting character when he stops being annoying adolescent.
Maybe.
I don't know. I mean, that's probably one of the only ways you could do it. So all that, and it was fun. I think the art, it was once or twice where I was like, this looks great. Who's drawing this? And I went back, and it's Andre Lima Araujo, who'd been drawing it all along, and I've seen his stuff around here and there. But he's got a real, real great storytelling sense, and some of the comedy stuff worked really well. It was a fun little miniseries.
That's good. I mean, that's, as we said before, describes the whole event. I think it's been fun. A bunch of them, I think 4 or 5 books this week tied into it.
But this one really had its own sort of tone and story that was just separate enough that takes place within everything that it didn't, you know. Some of the other ones are a little indistinguishable from which part of the story they're in.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like the other one that came out here, the War Scrolls, those are it's like a little anthology. There's 3 short stories in all of them. The Daredevil one, which is written by Jason Aaron, could have easily been part of one of the other books. So it tends to be a little less distinguishable from the main stuff, whereas this one really was, we're going to do this over in this corner.
Yeah, a side story.
That's an adjacent Thor corner.
Yeah, that's the best kind of thing.
Yeah.
So this week, American Carnage number 8, Brian Edward Hill, Leandro Fernandez. Next issue is the last issue.
Yeah, that's why we're talking about it, because I think we need to talk about it as much as possible.
With the supposedly it has nothing to do with the ending of Vertigo. Brian Edward Hill has said this is a really hard book for him to write, and no kidding.
I heard that, you know, and you know, I thought, okay. And then I was reading this book, and I saw it. I was like, yeah, this is probably pretty rough. I can get that.
And so next issue is the conclusion, which is a bummer. Listen, if it's hard for him to write, then I don't want him to go into unnecessary psychological trauma for my entertainment benefit. But this is a terrific book, and it's a bummer to see it go so soon. This was another great issue.
It really hit a stride on this issue,
mm-hmm.
I think, which brought together some stuff. And it, you know, this would have been a chapter break.
Yes.
I think. Or at least this arc
Well, something a lot of major things happen. You know, as because we're speeding towards the end, obviously.
Yeah.
Major things happen very quickly now.
I'm hoping for a double-sized issue 9 at least.
The FBI part of the story gets blown up a little bit, plus the white supremacist side, their group gets blown up a little bit.
We're this close to knowing who Obama Mask is.
Everyone has their agendas, and they're all colliding now, and they're all different.
And the dudes going to be president, or, you know, like he's seeking that actively. The relationships have switched and gelled a little more in terms of, I don't know anyone's name. I think his name's Rick, but and the sort of white supremacist daughter and her.
And they're all fucked up relationship.
She is a Jason Aaronian scalped character after my own heart. You know what I mean? Like, yeah,
she's the most interesting character because she has
totally
a lot of different facets. You know, then we have the scary Obama Mask hitman who has a terrifying sequence where he's getting dressed in the cop uniform,
mm-hmm.
and we see his face in kind of silhouette, like Snake Eyes style. Mm-hmm. Like he's just sort of anonymous force in the creepy racist mask. Everything is sort of coming apart at the seams, as you would in a very high stakes situation like this. And the Leandro Fernandez art is incredibly atmospheric and moody.
Yeah.
A lot of silhouettes, a lot of people just in totally dark silhouettes and a lot of darkness, a lot of heavy shadow work. It's a terrific book. It's a bummer, but it's a terrific book.
Fernandez is kind of a harbinger of, like, oh, he's going to be on something I really like and it's going to go away sooner than I want. So, like, what the hell happened to the Old Guard?
I don't know.
That book was so good.
It was like 3 out of 4 issues were pick of the week of that book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we were very excited for this book to come out. It did not disappoint. It's going away too soon, but, you know, whatever.
I will take it at face value, and I genuinely hope that, you know, that's the creator's choice, and that's his thing to do it with, and if he's taken out the way that he wants to and doing it his way.
This can't be easy to write.
No.
As a black writer.
This issue in particular was very heavy.
I don't think I noticed before, but the whole middle section is all 9-panel grids. Mm. Maybe the whole front first section. The whole FBI part. Once Rick punches the biker dude in the stomach and gives him to the FBI, after that, it's all 9-panel grids for like 6 pages.
Hmm. Look at that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a crime book story, this will be a really good little crime story.
Yeah, socially relevant and extremely
hard-boiled and tough.
It's a Vertigo book. It's the only book
that feels
like I can say this is a Vertigo book for quite a while.
It feels exactly like a Vertigo book.
Yeah.
It has that ineffable sense. Speaking of books ending, next issue of Assassination is the last issue.
I think that's fine.
Yeah. When I read that, I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that does make sense.
This is not an ongoing.
I really liked that at the beginning. I'm sorry, I just thought of fuck Tarkington again. I can't stop laughing at that. There's a sort of a lineup page at the beginning, and you just see like all of the characters who we met at the beginning, and there's only these 5 left.
Mm-hmm.
That's a better recap page than anything else you can do.
Yeah, especially when you've got all these different characters. I'm kind of hoping that Dave and fuck Tarkington survive and can have a spinoff book because they're a great comedy duo. Dave being the most sort of ordinary hitman named Dave, and fuck Tarkington being this hillbilly, you know, a savant hitman.
Yeah. It's Chris Schweitzer. That's what I love best.
They're a great match. Dave being sort of their somewhat urbane-esque. Mm-hmm. You know, normal dude, and so together they're funny.
I also really like it, like as a gag, or even just as a sort of story where two characters just really like each other, and you don't really know why. they're just all for that other person. You know, it's like that sort of no, we're friends. Why would he's wonderful, and especially when they have nothing in common. Mm-hmm. For some, that always works for me.
And look, the story is not messy, but there's not a lot. It's a bunch of. Crime families are at war, or maybe they're not. This is what's sort of revealed in this issue, is that maybe this whole time the original guy is caused this war to happen, and the hitmen are all killing each other as a result. And so it's not really that deep, but it's a lot of fun. And I really like some of the mechanics of it. So at the end, they realize one of the hitmen has been against them the whole time, and they're having a meeting as he's shooting at them. But the window is bulletproof, so you're just getting these pink, pink, pink sound effects in the background as they're talking. And it really ratcheted up the tension as he's just unloading at them, clearly not able to hit them. And then you realize that he's spelling out, fuck you assholes, on the window in bullets.
And there's another sequence. Basically, they go up to... They're taking the elevator up to the crime boss, and the doors of the elevator open, and they've made a plan. Mm-hmm. Here's what we're going to do. There's all these people with swords. And then I think it's Dave just starts hitting the button. You know, it's a thing in comic books that you can't have more than one action in a panel. It's not possible. Mm-hmm. So people will often write, he, you know, does this thing in a panel in a script and like it's not possible. But in this, it's him hitting the button over and over again. And the way that they illustrated that with the click, 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 click and the sort of motion on the thumb. And then the guy says, hey, and then he's still doing it. And it dings. And the guy says, they just closed the door on me. I've never seen that sequence in comics. I've seen it in movies.
Yeah.
You know, like that was a very modern movie kind of thing. I think it translated really well to comics. The fight that took place after that was really fun. And then it, in terms of sort of explaining, like getting us back to where we were at the, as they sort of make the realization, mm-hmm. they also sum it all up for us as readers because it got pretty frenetic for a bit to sort of keep track of. It was a really well-done issue.
Kyle Starks is terrific. Erica Henderson is terrific.
Yeah, she is.
The art is amazing. You're right. That sequence when he's clicking the button is fantastic. And you're right. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that before.
That is top-notch storytelling.
I found myself really looking at his thumb at the time. I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you portray constant movement like that?
Yeah.
It was funny. This is a funny book, but also action-packed.
Well-plotted and characterized. It's got all the things.
This is one of my favorite things that Image has put out in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And when they said next month's the last one, I was like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Kyle Stark's got to make his mark now. You watch. Probably a year from now, maybe 2 years from now. You'll see his name in a lot more stuff if that's what he wants to do.
Right. Where did I see it's the next week's the last one? Somewhere. I can't find it, but I definitely saw it somewhere. It makes sense story-wise.
Sure.
Hey, Josh.
Yes, sir?
What do you love most about Harry's?
It's a tough question because I like a lot about it. Mm-hmm. I was a customer before they came onto the show.
Yes.
You know, I've said before, the first thing that caught my eye was I really like that orange handle. Mm-hmm. But that really was just – that just draws the eye in, and it's got to back it up after that. So I like the system. I like the price. Right. I like that I was able to jump in and sort of give it a shot without a big risk, you know. And as soon as I do, I was like, oh, this is where I want to be in terms of my shaving. And upstairs, I still have a little drawer that has the other more expensive brands who I – this is not script, by the way. This is literally true. The other razor blades and you know, the fancy space handle that I stopped using immediately as soon as I started using my Harry's years ago. So sort of all of that stuff together turned me into a customer, and I've stayed that way.
You like the performance, but you also like the aesthetic.
I do.
Yeah. Which is fine, which is good.
Everything about it is how I want to deal with my shaving. I really did. It's funny, their advertising, I really hated having to ask somebody to get razor blades out.
It was the worst.
And every time they did, I thought, it's really this much money? Really, you're going to charge me this much for this? Fine.
It's true. Going into Duane Reade or Walgreens being like, can someone open the shaving case?
$25? Are you kidding me? And so they fixed all of that stuff for me. 100% true.
Yeah. And the Harry's founders agreed with you, Josh. They're two regular guys tired of getting ripped off and paying for overpriced gimmicks, vibrating heads, flex balls, handles look like props in a sci-fi movie. Those are just some of the tactics the leading brands used to overcharge us and you for years. Harry's makes quality, durable blades at a fair price, just $2 per blade, which is not $25, as Josh said, of other blades. And to keep prices low, they cut the middleman out, got their own factory in Germany, make the blades themselves, sell them directly to you, keeps the prices low, and that's what's great about Harry's. Now, they provide 100% quality guarantee, so if you don't like your shave, you can let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Join the 10 million to try Harry's. Claim your special offer by going to harrys.com/ifanboy. What do you get for that? Well, you get a trial shave set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, a weighted ergonomic handle for easy gripping, 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade for a close shave. The rich lathering shave gel. I call it luxurious. That will leave you smelling great. And plus the travel blade cover, which is, if you're traveling all the time like we are, it's a must-have. So you can keep your Harry's with you on the go and not have to use some dinky razor blade that the hotel gives you that's really in danger of killing you. So, as we said, listeners of the show can redeem your trial set by going to harrys.com/ifanboy. And you too can luxuriate in a shave that is both economically viable, technically sound, and beautiful to look at.
He just ad-libbed that, people.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to respect that what just happened there.
Before we move to the next book, I wanted to mention that it says in the letters column for Assassination, we're nearing the end of our Assassin saga. So maybe not next issue, but very soon.
Okay.
So it could be next issue, it could be the issue after. This is issue 5, 4. Mm-hmm. So maybe a little 6, but it's not going to be much more.
So much like we were talking about Middle West and Scotty Young's work, as I was reading Farmhand number 9 and 8 before it, I thought, oh, this is really moving along now. It's a thing. I was also particularly drawn to the fact that it looks like Chew and it feels like Chew, but it's not Chew.
No.
And what I mean is, it doesn't feel like Chew. I'm like, oh, this reminds me of that. The things that worked about his work in Chew are working here. And I think it's actually almost more interesting because it's pretty easy. Like, you could say that Chew was a crime sci-fi book, you know, and they were actually going for that angle to a certain extent. It was not all supposed to be funny, but it was all kind of funny. This has more of a horror element, mm-hmm. I think, and family drama stuff that is actually more dramatic than anything in Chew. And then finally, the last thing I think I want to say is that Rob Guillory is a guy who I don't think – he's maybe written a couple things here and there, but he's never done an ongoing series. I was reading through this and I thought, wow, his dialogue is really very strong and very natural. And once I noticed it, I started paying attention to it, and I found that to be the case all the way through, which is no small thing really as far as I'm concerned. So I've been enjoying it, and I think I'm getting more impressed by it as it keeps going.
Yeah, I think you're seeing a book that's getting better as it goes.
He's figuring it out.
Not that it's been bad, but you can see him figuring out how to do an ongoing as you're reading it, which is part of the interesting part of reading indie books sometimes, is seeing the artists sort of work it through on the page. He's obviously a talented artist, and just figuring out how to do this is interesting. I like it. Every once in a while, I'm like, am I losing the thread here? But he always brings it back. The characters are fun. It's a funny book, as well as dramatic. And, you know, obviously, the less overtly horror, the better. But and here we get very overtly horror. But
sure,
you know, I still really like it. And he did a couple of really great things in this issue.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see what it's coming out of and how the mind of the writer works in this. Mm-hmm. You know, because we only knew him as the artist did that and he put all the little gags in it. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, well, look at these other dimensions of what's going on. And this is a book where the little weird pet thing I think is absolutely needed. Yes. I know that you're not a Thorey fan, but in this, like, you need that light side of it because it justifies the art style when contrasted against sort of the scary horror stuff.
I agree with you.
Okay.
Justice League 26, James Tynion? It's Tynion, isn't it? It's Tynion IV, Javier Fernandez. This issue almost felt like the first issue where I thought, yes, this is the Justice League. This is what Justice League should feel like.
This was a continuation for the backup stories in the previous one, right?
Right. The last arc was them in the other dimension. And then the backup was Luther telling the world, hey, go ahead and be assholes. I'm going to give you the money and the powers to exploit your darkest desires because we're all going to die in a year anyway, so fuck it. Which is obviously a very heavy metaphor for the world right now. And so here we're continuing that story, and I guess apparently Lex Luthor died in that sequence. I didn't remember that happening, but he's thought to have killed himself for the Earth. Martian Manhunter doesn't believe it, so he's searching for him. But in the meantime, the Justice League is trying to gather together a group of heroes to help fight the oncoming war with the people from the Source Wall. So they go to the multiverse. Like, there's like a hangout club for the multiverse. So you get tons of Easter egg-y things. Flash hanging out with the Flash from Kingdom Come and Batman Beyond and Superman from Kingdom Come, and then even Darwin Cook's version of the Justice League and people like that. So you get like all those Easter egg-y things. But you also get a sense this is a big thing that's happening. So back at the Hall of Justice, the Metal Men are working on the problem along with Ryan Choi. And then you have another room where all the detectives, Plastic Man and Detective Shimp and Constantine, and they're working on the problem along with Question, who talks like Rorschach here. And then they're training the younger heroes. Like, you sort of get this tour through the Hall of Justice where you feel like, okay, this is actually like a universe-spanning problem. This feels like the Justice League in a way that it hasn't in a long time. And I really liked it. Javier Fernandez obviously is terrific.
Also, I know that you said Detective Chimp, but for a second I heard Detective Shemp, and I thought that was funny.
Detective Shemp and Mo and Larry.
Yeah.
And Kirby.
Why I oughta.
So the Question said Herm. I don't know how I feel about that. I was actually, by the end of it, like, wow, I really like that. I don't know that I wouldn't have made that my pick of the week. I don't know what I would have made, but that was definitely a thought I had. Are you still on Guardians of the Galaxy?
I am. I am on Guardians of the Galaxy.
I love this issue.
Did you?
Yeah. I love the Jeff Shaw art. He draws everyone with these strange, non-traditional superhero faces, mm-hmm. and I kind of dig it.
Yeah, no, I get that. I absolutely get that. I like the explanation of what was going on with Eros the whole time, that mm-hmm. Thanos was in there. I like the sort of threat of Thanos in this. I think it works really well. You know, you've got the band of heroes, I'm air quoting, you know, who don't get along and don't want to, but they all have to do, they all have to do a thing together. And I thought that worked well. I feel like it is, I don't want to say it's missing something, but I feel like I'm looking for something with it that I'm not getting yet. And that's very vague.
Well, this was, I think, a way for Donny Cates to establish his tone of the book. So here you've got a giant team of misfits who are all the Guardians. And by the end of it, they all quit. So you're left with a much smaller team that's more manageable, plus is mostly recognizable from the movies, plus a couple of extra characters. This was the setup, creating the new reality, and now we're going to move forward. Obviously, Rocket's going to come back, and you've got Groot, and you've got Star-Lord and Gamora.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, Moondragon and Beta Ray Bill. You got Beta Ray Bill, and you have Lockjaw.
Yep.
So this book should be right up your alley.
There's a lot of good stuff in there. I really don't like that Groot talks.
Yeah, well, obviously that's a problem.
I mean, that really bothers me in a way that I don't think even makes sense, but there we are. I wanted to quickly mention Miles Morales Spider-Man number 7. I had been very much for this book, and I am moving away from it, and I don't want to.
Yeah, I couldn't. I told you that first issue just didn't do it for me, and I never read anymore.
Yeah, this one had three different artists in it, and some of that art was not good. There were sequences of it, and I really thought, I was like, I don't think this is professional work, and I think that it undercuts the work that's being done. I think one of the things that's happening is that so much product is going out that, like, they need to hire a bunch of people.
So much product's going out at such a frequency, and I could name you 5 books this week whose art I thought was not professional. Yeah. It was really glaring this week.
Mainstream.
Mainstream. Big 2 books. Not Image, not Aftershock.
Yeah.
Big 2 books where I was like, I don't think that's professional work.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to harp on it. I didn't want to bring it up, but, like, since you did. It was shocking this
week. Yeah, I noticed it a lot. And then, so the thing that happened in this book, which is not necessarily on its own a really bad thing, but is never a good sign, is that they bring Miles to dinner, his parents, and they announce to him that they're going to have a baby. And I was like, oh, God, that's what every TV show on Earth has done wrong. You know? And all of a sudden, like, then you go, well, what's the future? Oh, no. You know, like, like, what are the storylines that come out of that? None of them good. Or at least none of them original or interesting. There was this little sequence, and it really bothered me, was that he shows up late to dinner because he was fighting with somebody, which is kind of interesting and whatever, and he shows up, and they say, we're going to have a baby. And he goes, you know, there's the moment where you think he's going to get mad or do whatever, and he goes, it's great, congratulations. Very hackneyed. I've seen it 1,000 times. And I'm a supporter of Salad and Ahmed's writing, as we've heard in the past, but I don't like this. And then his phone rings, or he gets a text because he's a kid and let's, you know. He says, I got to go to the library to study with Genki. And I was like, you didn't eat dinner. And it just, like, it didn't track. It stuck out to me. And also, that didn't need to happen because the next scene is he walks out of the restaurant and he gets kidnapped. He could have finished dinner and gotten kidnapped. He didn't have to run out. It was just this little, like, it was odd. Like, why did that happen that way? And it's not a huge mistake, but it was indicative of, like, a larger, like, this isn't. Between the art, between the plotting, I thought the dialogue was not the best. And I think that there's an active thing going on where they're adjusting him further along to have a slightly different character or personality than I think than when Bendis was writing it, which isn't necessarily bad, but it makes it feel weird.
Yeah.
So that's that.
I was turned off by the first issue and never went back.
Yeah. There's been some good issues.
Yeah.
I haven't taken you to Star Wars Corner in some time.
No, I feel like I'm being taken against my will, much like Miles Morales outside the restaurant.
That's fine. At least you finish a meal first, though.
I always finish the meal.
Didn't even order, though. Like, the guy, they hadn't even. He's like, why are you in the restaurant? You could have done this in a coffee shop.
Teenagers are hungry, too.
Yes.
All the time.
They're going to take a free restaurant meal.
Right.
Especially Spider-Man. He had just finished fighting somebody.
He burned a lot of calories. You got to fill up.
Yeah.
You got to refuel. He would have eaten. I mean, regular teenagers who are not doing anything quite like fighting are always hungry.
Yeah.
They're growing.
9-year-olds, I can just attest to, by the way.
Also growing.
Yeah. Not my 5-year-old. Not really into food.
He's shrinking.
He's quite small. Star Wars number 67. this arc basically has been going on forever. If you're reading the story, you know what I'm talking about. There's this planet, and it's a mining colony planet, and it's not unlike Jedha, that it seems like it's going to blow up. Jedha from Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
And the rebels have some allies who betrayed them because they want the planet to blow up like Jedha did to them. They want to get them back. And then the queen of the planet had betrayed Leia. A lot of stuff going on. It's been a very long arc. And I started reading. I thought, I need this arc to be over. And then it was. This was the end of that arc. And I thought it ended really nicely. The character stuff was really good. The art is Angel Unzueta, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he's exactly like Salvador La Roca's, not my favorite photorealistic art. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, it's exactly the same. Like, I wouldn't have been able to tell you it was a different artist from that.
I assume that's a license mandate that that kind of art be on the book, probably.
I guess. But I do know that those issues where Stuart Immonen did them way back when with Jason Aaron were the best of the entire run.
Right. You're a comic fan, not a licensee.
Maybe. Anyway, it turns out this is Kieran Gillen's last issue.
I think I had heard about that.
He wrote a nice bit at the end.
What, do you think this was an Image book?
I know. It was, I know, hold the presses, Kieran Gillen put an essay in the end of his comic book. But it there was a nice little bit where he said, you know, I've been writing Star Wars now for years, mm-hmm. which is
yeah,
true.
Yes, yeah.
Started with Darth Vader. I thought, oh, sure, I'll do this for a little while, and that's going to be my last Marvel work while I go off to do some of my own stuff. He said, I'm going to do Darth Vader for a while, and then they offered him, like, well, would you like to continue Dr. Aphra's story? And he said, yeah, you know what, I'll do that for a little while. Make sure I set that character up before I take off, because he really liked her and I did too.
Well, yeah, she's got like an action figure. Like, she's a whole industry now. So
yeah, really great character. You know, he's left a mark that was worthwhile. And then, you know, do you want to just do the Star Wars book? And he thought, I don't really want to do that. I don't even know how I would do that. And they thought about it over the weekend and you know, he's like, yeah, you know what? I think I have a story or something I could tell. I'm a little worried about writing these characters. Then as soon as he started writing them, he said, you know, it worked for him. And truthfully, in the beginning, I had said that Jason Aaron did a very good job at capturing those characters' voices, as did Kieran Gillen. Kieran Gillen is a very what's the word I'm looking for? When you read his stuff, a lot of times you know it's him.
He has a strong personal voice.
Yes, that's a very good way to put it. And I think that he did this Star Wars book right. Mm-hmm. I think that he put the best part of himself into it, but in the way that it worked for the book. And it was not overly obtuse, and it was a good Star Wars book. It was well plotted, it was well characterized, and now he's come to the end of it. But I did like that progression of he felt a little bit drawn to continue with these after he decided not to. So it wasn't for the wrong reasons.
Right.
You know, he's like, well, I didn't go back. I want to say I'm just still continuing it for a little longer. It was a good run, and I wanted to give credit to that.
Right.
That's a hard job, you know, writing the Star Wars book. And having it really, you know, lots of people wrote Star Wars over at Dark Horse for a long time, and it was not memorable.
It wasn't high profile because
This
is Disney, and it's quote unquote official. And
I read a lot of it, and a lot of it was pretty throwaway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I kept trying to go. I was like, I wanted to have a good one, and you know, 67 issues of a pretty good Star Wars comic book with art I didn't really like.
Do you know who the new writer is?
It's Greg Pak.
Yes.
Who's been doing the little one-shots that have been pretty good. So I think that's a good choice. I think it's the right choice to not go with, you know, like a huge name. I mean, they had Jason Aaron on it, which is not insignificant. But they didn't go for that with Kieran Gillen. They didn't go for that. They're not going for that with Greg Pak. Like, here's a guy who, you know, is a good, experienced veteran comic book writer. Mm-hmm. He's not necessarily trying to prove something on there. He's just going to do a good job on it. Mm-hmm. And also, Phil Noto.
Hmm.
It's going to be the artist. I can't imagine he will be the ongoing artist indefinitely.
No.
But we'll do an arc of that, which ain't bad either. So that starts the next month.
So let's talk about the patron pick. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Everyone who joins up to become a patron can help vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week, a book that took an early lead in the voting and then held on by its fingernails was Usagi Yojimbo #1, the relaunch book from IDW, Stan Sakai, colors by Tom Luth. And this is the second time Usagi Yojimbo has been a patron pick. The last time was the first issue of the miniseries that we both...
Yes, I didn't know this was coming, and I didn't know what it was. I know that I went to get the book, and I was like, why is it not on Dark Horse? Did someone make a huge mistake? And I found that it had gone to IDW, you know, and it had been colorized.
Question.
Yeah.
Did you ever make it to the book Because I'm still scrolling through all the variant covers.
There's a lot of variant covers.
There's like 25 of them.
You know what really upset me about that?
Mm-hmm.
It was not a listing. I had to go by the scrawled signatures, and I could tell who some of them were, and I couldn't tell whether those were. And then I think they explained about four of them, and the rest of them I'm just out to pasture trying to figure out which one's which. But yes, it was a lot of variant covers.
So you're in a saga. I read the last miniseries. We both really liked it. We talked about it a lot in the show. Is this the first time that the book has been colored?
I don't know ever. Maybe there was a collection or there was a special thing or something.
But generally, it was black and white.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's always been black and white at Dark Horse every time I've ever read it.
So that's my first comment, is that I did not like it colored.
I agree.
I thought the art lost a lot of its specialness
and
with the coloring. Yes. It had a very unique look with the black and white art.
And when we had talked about it before, it had a flatness to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It had a two-dimensional quality, which I think is a strength. So then coming in with, and even more so than Bone, I think Bone is another example of a thing that was very successful and famous for being line-drawn cartooning that was black and white, and that's how it was produced, probably more for economic reasons than anything else.
Sure.
and expediency. But it lent itself well to being colored because of the way that Jeff Smith cartooning worked. And also then they went on to sell them to kids. And if that's what gets a million kids to read Jeff Smith's cartoon, be Ted Turner. I don't care. That's not going to happen here. And the artwork has a very different quality to it. It's almost like wall paintings, you know?
Yeah, I struggled with it.
It's one thing if the color was sort of some of the more flat stuff that we're used to seeing. And it is in some places, but there was, you know, I actually take it back. The puppet show is, it's just little gradients that, it doesn't matter. Coloring doesn't need to be there. I don't like it.
Yeah, I didn't like it. It just felt like another comic. And it doesn't take away from the line work. Stan Sakai is a genius, but it changed the feel of the book completely. I assume it's an IDW mandate. I can't imagine it's something Stan Sakai wanted to do. Maybe it was.
Well, I mean, it sounded like when I read it, and there's a horrible typo at the end. Horrible.
Yeah.
Where they say, we're really happy to have Stan Saki here. And I was like, that is the most terrible thing you could do.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like they say it's the newest Usagi Tales. So I was thinking that maybe they were reprinting.
Well, they're going to be reprinting all of it in color.
Yeah, we will be reprinting. But this is a new one.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's interesting, because the other thing I thought when I started reading it was like, what a weird story to start with.
Yeah, I didn't find the story that compelling.
No, it wasn't. And also, this is a good example of like a very mid-run, like, you know.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the 130s, this is the story that he wants to do, and I'd have been totally fine with it. But it was a weird choice for a number one issue at a new publisher.
It didn't really give you any information.
No.
You didn't know who Usagi really was other than a samurai. You don't know anything about him. You don't know anything about the world.
He wasn't in it for half the book.
He's not in it for half the book. The first half of the book is this puppet show. Usagi's watching the puppet show, and then he has tea. It's not that it was boring, but it just, as you said, it felt like something you had already been reading, and this is like a mid-story. A first issue needs to introduce the characters in the world and the conflict, and it has to do some level setting. This didn't do any level setting.
Well, I am a little at odds, though, because it is one of the things, like, I just picked up a Usagi Yojimbo at some point and started reading it, and I liked that I could do that, and I didn't need any of that, because it's fairly simple or whatever. However, there are different forms of that storytelling, and I don't think you need to explain everything, because I think it's pretty self-explanatory. This was not the right type of story, though. That being said, if this had been Usagi Yojimbo number 157,
mm-hmm.
I would be totally fine with it, because it was a really interesting – he does everything is historical-based.
Yep.
Like, these puppet shows are a thing that happened, and he talks about it at the end. That part is great.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's the same thing but the last one with the religion,
yes,
in Japan, the Christianity,
yep,
angle. Yeah.
And, you know, we get taught American history. We don't get taught Japanese history. So when, you know, you learn international history at other places and cultures, it is interesting. You know, it is wow, this is a thing I didn't know about. These plays would go on for a whole day. It was a real thing. You know, there was an apprentice, and he doesn't get to do the right-handed mouth for another 10 years. All that is great. Weird fucking place to do a number one issue at a new publisher.
Yeah.
And maybe that's Stan Sakai's choice. Maybe Stan's like, this is how I do it. This is what I'm going to do. Don't tell me to do otherwise. And I'm like, whatever you say, Stan Saki.
I think the coloring really bothered me because, if you know, I'm someone who watches a lot of black and white movies, and
sure,
the idea, you actually mentioned it early in the episode, there are certain people who won't read a comic that's black and white or won't watch a movie that's black and white, like, really bothers me. And mm-hmm. I hope it wasn't that kind of thought, that the reason why they started coloring it. I mean, maybe they think they'll reach more kids or markets or whatever.
I assume that's it.
It just, as a, from artistic purity level, it bugged me.
Also, I love that Dark Horse was a place that was going to keep this going. Mm-hmm. And I don't like the idea that there's two possibilities. There's one that Dark Horse was like, we can't keep doing this. Mm-hmm. And there are all sorts of valid reasons why one would say that. And that doesn't make them necessarily bad guys or whatever. So that's one. That would suck. But I get it. Two, you know, IDW came in and said, you know, we're going to offer you a better, you know, rate or something about the deal that works. That we want to do it color because we think it'll reach a bigger audience and we can sell more books and more people can be. Okay, fine. I get that. But, you know, they've done that with other books before. They started releasing the colored Box Office Poisons, one of my favorite, you know, graphic novels of all time.
Last couple issues, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't want him to disappear. He got really sick for a while, which is why there weren't any issues, you know, but I don't want him to move over to IDW and then, you know, a year or two later.
Yeah,
that would be such a bummer. It's such a stalwart. Like, but you know, and I'm partially responsible, you know, like you don't get every issue, you know, like, mm-hmm. But I like that it's there. There was a store in town that closed and my wife was like, I hadn't bought anything there in a while, but I liked it's there. And I was like, that doesn't pay the bills.
Like, Goodwill don't do nothing for rent.
Nope.
Yeah, I don't know. I was excited for this because I loved the last miniseries and this kind of fell flat for me. Let's do ratings.
Ratings.
Ratings out of 5. This is hard. Because I have a lot of respect for Stan Sakai's talent and place in the industry.
Yeah, I could give it different ratings depending on the context I'm coming at it from. But I'm not allowed to do that.
A purely comic book reading experience for this particular issue, I'm going to give it a 2.
I'm going to go 2.5 because the thing is, once I started reading it, I did sort of forget about the color and I was just like, I'm reading a Usagi Yojimbo thing. And I stopped thinking about, this is weird for a number one issue and this is weird, you know, being in color. And it did feel familiar in that way. So yeah, I'll go with that. Weird choices though.
All right, patreon.com/ifanboy. That's where you can go and vote to add a book to the rundown. Thanks for all those who do.
Make sure you go to patreon.com/ifanboy and join the Stan Lee was better at this. The mighty Marvel Mary iFanboy army, whatever it is.
It was his superpower. That was his patron power.
That really was his superpower. He had a bunch of them. He's very tall, for example. I don't think most people know that.
Yeah.
I think you picture him as a 5'6", 5'7" guy.
Nope.
No, he was a giant. He was really tall and thin. The next stretch goal, we have goals on the Patreon there.
Good to have goals.
It, I mean, obviously. And at this age, you realize, oh, we're not going to hit all of them.
every day, one more goal goes away.
Well, at this point, we're making choices.
Right.
Listen, I mean, I can do this, but that means that's definitely not happening. Oh, well, I guess I'll never mountain bike British Columbia. Fine. Because by the time I can go there, I'm going to be 60 and it's going to hurt.
You're going to fall and break something.
Yeah, there's that too. The way Patreon works is you donate at a certain level, and when you do that, you get rewards for each of those. So $5 and up, you get a patron power. We're going to get to that in a little bit. Overall, we have collective goals as well. They've done things like bring back the Talksplodes and Booksplodes, which I almost have to thank you people for doing, and I think the listeners certainly do. Who are getting that kind of content. The next stretch goal is a non-comics media podcast. So basically a smaller, more regular version monthly of the all media show that we do at the end of the year. They will not all be 3.5 hours.
No, God.
I don't know that I have time for that.
No, we don't.
I'm really looking forward to being able to do that. So it would be really cool if I guarantee you there's a handful of people out there who are saying like, oh man, I really should do that, or I've been meaning to. And once you do it, you will get a certain moral satisfaction. Not just us, anybody you serve. You know, like I get my monthly Patreon thing and I'm like, oh, good. I'm glad I'm still. And it gets automated. You don't have to think about it. Help support things like this. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily just ours. Ours would be great. But if people, you know, you're thinking about doing, like, step over that line, do the thing. I've listened to way too many NPR pledge drives. I'm so sorry. But if you're on the edge, maybe make the step. And then you don't even have to think about it. It's automated after that. You don't have to worry about it. Go over to ifanboy.threadless.com. You can check out our t-shirt store and other associated products. Sundry, I believe, is one word for it. Dry goods.
Yeah, dry goods.
Go to Bullock and Stars.
We're basically, after all these years, a dry goods store.
I mean, more or less.
Yeah.
There are various products which you can put our designs on and order, and they will custom print those and send them to you for reasonable prices. reasonable prices. There's 7 designs over in the store. I'm not going to feed you a bunch of lines about what's coming next. We're doing our best. Go over to ifanboy.com/support. You will find a direct donation there via PayPal if you don't want to do any of those things, but you do want to toss a little dosh our way. We always appreciate that. We appreciate all of the people who do those things. And then finally, ifanboy.com/Amazon. You will find links to buy the books on Bookxplode. You will always find a link to the Pick of the Week book and the music that we use in the show. Those will also take you over to Amazon.com. And anything that you purchase from that click-through will go through to help us. And we appreciate that.
Yes, and as we mentioned, at patreon.com/ifanboy, if you give it the $5 or higher level, we give you a superpower live on the show. And Josh is going to kick us off.
Sure. Hey, Chuck! Our first supporter is Morgan Berry.
Oh, it's your cousin Morgan. Morgan Berry.
I said I wasn't going to do it, and I was like, I know I can make Connor laugh.
No, not so Marvin. Morgan.
Morgan.
No, I don't play any instruments.
He's an accountant. Morgan Berry, maybe male or female. I don't know. Doesn't matter. Morgan's power is to add an echo effect to either his own voice or anybody else's voice who's speaking, and it's variable depending on the dramatic effect that they want to have.
So he can make it sound as if you are shouting across a lake at a mountain?
Uh-huh. Well, it's not an amplitude.
No, but I mean, like, that's a very different kind of echo than sort of like your audio software.
Well, I was thinking more of like a, you know, like when a song hits a crescendo, mm-hmm. and then the last word of the verse then is hit with a delay where it's like, and everything is good, 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 good. And so like, there's a lot of Lou Gehrig speeches.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, things like that. But he can add that, or she can add to their own voice or the voices of others in direct proximity. The other person can't control that, by the way.
No, it's all Morgan's doing.
Then there's infinite repeat. There's a lot of parameters that can be set depending on the way that Morgan wants to go with it.
So Chuck might want Morgan in the control room.
Oh, yeah. To add that old-timey guitar, you want to have a short slapback with only one repeat.
Jack Scott, which is a great name to exclaim when you're shocked.
Or if you don't know anything about what's going on, you know Jack Scott.
That's true. Jack can grow perfectly ripe fruit from his hands.
Ooh. So Jack is Swamp Thing.
Yes, but only fruit and only from his hands. You need a watermelon, he could pop one out for you.
Oof.
You need an apple, various kinds. Here you go. He can grow it.
Can I get a Pippin Granny Smith hybrid? Sure thing. Does it make that sound?
Yes, it pops out. It's immediate. It's not like he has to spend time growing it. It's just pops out of his hand.
That would get problematic, especially the aforementioned watermelon.
Or pumpkins.
Yeah.
Some of these giant vines coming out 20 feet long. Yeah, no, he'd pop it out. October, you know, Halloween time, he's popping out pumpkins left and right. Christmas time, maybe you got apples coming out for pies or pumpkin, mm-hmm. you know, whatever you're doing at Christmas time, whatever you like to do.
You know what I want right now?
Hmm.
An apple pie. That's what happened there. Next up, Cody Shelton. When he's not riding the range, Cody Shelton.
Everybody has these cool names.
I know. It's a very like fiction book name sort of.
He's a cowboy thing for sure.
Been going on lately. Okay. Cody Shelton has precise control over all of his bodily fluids.
Okay.
And the issuance thereof.
Give me an example.
Well, say that there's a situation where he's like very hot,
mm-hmm.
but he can't be very sweaty.
Sure.
So he's controlling the sweat, where it's coming from, how much, in a way to cool oneself off, you know, in a way that works. But sometimes, you know, you don't want to have the flop sweat on your head while you're giving a presentation,
even though it's
100 degrees and humid. Yeah, exactly. So there's a precise control over that. Doesn't tend to get a cold because he's controlling the mucous membrane. Like, I don't want to let this out. Sometimes it's necessary, though. Nobody else is around. Flush it all out.
Mm.
Go. There's just the right amount of earwax because you need some. People act like earwax is gross. It's necessary.
It's both. It's gross and necessary.
Great actor. You know, can turn on the tears in a second.
Sure.
Yep. Precise control of all bodily fluids.
The single named Gabriel has an indestructible beard.
Wow.
Which means shot in the beard, bullet bounces off. The sad thing is, Josh, is that he can't cut it.
Invulnerabeard.
There's no scissor or clipper that man has made yet that can cut his beard.
Questions.
Mm-hmm.
How large is said beard?
Well, it grows, so it grows until...
Oh!
And, you know, he doesn't
but
control...
But it can't be cut.
It just can't be cut or harmed in any way.
All right. So, it grows indefinitely.
Well, it grows as one's beard does. Some people's beards grow big and furry and thick, and others, you know, don't. So, it's whatever Gabriel's...
Don't take shots at me.
Natural. Natural. You have a fine beard. Whatever Gabriel's natural beard growth is... But it can't be cut, so it'll keep going if that's what it wants to do. But in the meantime, it can't be destroyed.
If Gabriel lives a long life, that could be problematic.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Well, but also, anyone makes fun of him, he just whacks him with his beard.
Yeah. The powers give and the powers take away.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea in your mind of what sort of texture, what sort of type of beard Gabriel has?
Well, I mean, does he oil it? Gabriel, you know, does he...
Does the really oil make a difference if it can't penetrate?
It just can't be destroyed.
Okay.
You know, it can still be pampered.
Okay. You know, that's a real pain. An ingrown hair in that situation is going to be a problem.
Right. It's a curse in many ways.
Yeah. The patron power is give and take away.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. You can vote in the patron pick. You can get your superpower. You can come to the hangouts. You can do all the stuff there. Go check it out. And we're long again, Josh.
I figured that might happen. We did a good job last week, and mm-hmm. I just figure we're just going to blow it all out this week, and that seems to be what's happening. Do you have a preference to do one of those, or do you want to save them for next time?
Let's just do the first one. We might as well.
Okay.
Ryan from the UK says, I've been thinking about this question for a good few minutes now since listening to the Tom King Talksplode. Connor and Ron used to tease that Josh hates fun. Does Josh look back at his younger self and think they had a point? This question is inspired by Josh talking to Tom King about embracing the silliness of comics in a way he didn't used to, and it's intended as a bit of springboard for you both to talk about comics you enjoy now that you wouldn't have enjoyed 10 years ago. P.S. My patron powers mentally untripping any breaker has come in handy once so far in the last 6 weeks.
I'm glad that the power is working for you. I think that's important.
Is it actually working? Did we actually give someone a superpower?
I mean, if that happens... I'd want to know about it.
That's big news.
And then we'd have to choose much more carefully.
I need to prepare better. I'm sorry, Gabriel.
I could really mess somebody's life up by not writing something down before we started the show and just being like, you're a beanbag chair. Wait, I'm going to write that down.
So, Josh.
Yeah.
Do you look back at your life and think that the Josh hates fun line was true, was false, was some truth, was some false?
It was some true and some false. Mm-hmm. My justification for it was always that I took myself too seriously. What person in his 20s doesn't? Or 30s?
Especially, or 39.
Yeah. No. See? Don't. But my whole thing was always that, like, you know, I don't like everything, but I really like the stuff that I like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I have, if anything, I've expanded. I was wasting too much energy worrying about that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so with context, that realm of things that I can enjoy has gotten a little bigger, and I don't spend as much time worrying about why I don't like things. Disaster movies is a really good example. I recognize that a disaster movie is a stupid formula, but I get a great deal of joy out of watching. I just saw the Godzilla movie, which is in essence a disaster movie that has all of the same notes and cliches that every disaster movie has. And when you watch them, you can check them off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, that guy got killed in the beginning. That's has to. Big speech, twist, right. You know, guy saves his family. And Godzilla had that, and it had all of the great TV actors that were in it at the same time with Kyle Chandler and Bradley Whitford, things like that. I can have more fun with that. I don't tend to like dumb stuff still. I don't like dumb things. I never have.
Well, you just rattled off some dumb thing. I mean, those movies are dumb.
I feel like
San Andreas is dumb. It's awesome, but it's dumb.
Do you think that I have a sliding scale of the level of self-awareness that I think something has. And if it has too much, it's not good. If it doesn't have enough, it's not good, but sometimes it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Fast and the Furious movies are great because I'm not sure that at least early on they were self-aware of how self-serious they were.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really funny. I remember watching the first one with you like a really long time ago, and we're like, this is fantastic. Like, they don't even know what they're doing.
I will say this. I still defend the Josh hates fun thing from your early days, because I think you were very wrapped up in liking what you was deemed as important or what you should like, and not tarnishing your cool image of yourself.
It hurts, but I don't think it's untrue.
But you've grown since then.
I mean, as we all should.
We all grow, and you are definitely much better. There are, every once in a while, it pops its head up, but you are, and everyone has their things that they think are stupid or whatever, but you are definitely much changed since we started doing the show when we were in our 20s.
And I think...
Which is good.
I think that one of the things that happens
having kids changed you.
Sure. Yeah, no, I can watch a shitty movie now, no problem, if they like it. Although we have seen, I've seen lots of kid movies. We did the Strawberry Shortcake thing. That's whenever I get mad. Like, that wasn't me hating fun. That was like, I'm not stupid. Don't treat me like I'm stupid. Mm-hmm. I don't like that still.
Right.
I think so much has to do when people say, I don't like this or it's not good. A lot of times they're saying that's not my aesthetic. And they want to prove to other people that their aesthetic is not the thing that is in front of them. And so when somebody says, I don't like Frank Miller books, they're saying that their aesthetic adheres to, you know, the things that they wouldn't have liked about something like Holy Terror.
Right.
And it offends your aesthetic. But it is important to understand that all of those choices, I make jokes a lot, but I say them seriously. So like I was talking about how I hate boat shoes. I hate boat shoes. I don't care if you wear boat shoes, but it's not my aesthetic. So I think it's funny. And, you know, I think sometimes people who listen are very literal, but there was truth in that. That was the most self-centered thing. Can we talk about you next time?
If there's an email.
All right. There you go, people.
Contact@fanboy.com. That's how you can get at the show. Josh has grown quite a bit in the 25 years I've known you.
Yeah. I should hope so. That's the right way to go, isn't it?
You'd hope.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you still have that bleach blonde hair.
Be thin, though.
There's a good and a bad.
I have a nicer car now. You said contact@fanboy.com, so we'll move along to plugging the things that we did. Mm-hmm. It was alluded to a little earlier this week on two occasions, only one successful. I released the Tom King Talksplode show. Tom, along with Mitch Gerrards, were the first guests on the relaunched Talksplode almost exactly 3 years ago. It was June of 2016. Mm-hmm. Tom was just about to start Batman, or had just started one or the other. Sheriff Babylon was wrapping up at that time. Mr. Miracle was not a thing.
So a lot's happened since then.
He was just about to step up into the next level. And so I thought, A, how'd you do 70 issues of Batman in that time? And B, why don't you come back and talk to me now? And so we did. We talked for a very long time. It was an hour 46 show. I think the file's much longer. We went through a lot of stuff. It was interesting, though, because it went I always say I like the show, so I really like this show. I consider Tom a friend of the show. He's been around for a long time. You know, he's familiar with our show. He knows where I'm coming, so it made the conversation very easy. We got off the rails really quick. It was not, I think, the typical talk about the comics that we normally do, so you get a chance to get to know the creator. And also, a lot of we talked about a lot of stuff that's been going on in the news, like, what is this about? And he just tells us, because it's easier than being cagey or whatever, but also an insight into the mind of a guy who's really had an interesting career in comics in the past, you know, 5 years or so.
We mentioned the Booksplode that we did alternately with the Talksplode. We talked about Daredevil Born Again, Frank Miller, David Mazzucchelli. And so it's been a lot of Frank Miller talk, more in the last month than we've had in years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been good. So check that out.
And of course, you guys saw X-Men Dark Phoenix.
Yeah,
and I think the show on that is there. And I think that we will never mention it again.
Also, coming up in 2 weeks will be Spider-Man Far From Home. I'm not sure when that's going to come out because the movie comes out over the American July 4th holiday weekend. So we need to figure out how that's going to happen. But it will come out. The show on that will come out at some point.
Listen, everybody listening, I mean, the vast majority of people listening are going to go see the movie.
Mm-hmm.
We will go see the movie also. And then you will get our take on it as soon as we're able.
Yeah, as soon as we're able. Probably that weekend.
That's how we're gonna.
But who knows? We haven't talked about it yet. It's just holiday weekends are tough.
Connor's very invested in getting them out as soon as – much more than I am. So he'll make that happen. I won't take any credit for it.
And then there'll be an animated show sometime in August. So there'll be some shows coming out, some extra shows coming out the next couple weeks. So in the meantime, head over to fanboy.com. You can find all the shows we just talked about, all of our podcasts, all of our old written content is there, most of it anyway. And you can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy or following us @ifanboy on Twitter and following @ifanboycomics on Instagram, where in addition to finding out the pick, you can also see the Best of the Week in Panels feature and whatever random stuff comes out. I think around during Comic-Con, there'll probably be a lot more stuff posted there. We used to post Comic-Con video and pictures onto our Twitter account, but I think now we'll be switching over to Instagram for that. So you can check that out during Comic-Con in a few weeks. And follow us individually @JA Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram, and follow us.
Follow me.
It's a long. It's been a long day. It's only a couple hours. At CS Kilpatrick on Instagram.
If you like this show, you like any show, make sure you support it. Same thing we talked about with Patreon. Leave reviews. Leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts or whatever that is. Support the shows that you like. That's a really good way. It lets folks who are browsing around like, oh, this is worth my time because all these people have taking the time to give it a rating. It's a really easy way to do that. It doesn't take you very long. Rating. Or tell people about it on social media, in real life, however it is that you want to recommend things that you love. Please do that. And I see it a lot. I see people recommend our show along with other shows and their own shows. Don't do that so much. Let somebody else do it. And that's about it. So thanks for everybody who did that. We have to stop these shows from getting so long.
Yeah,
it's a problem. It's fun. This part, super fun. The other parts on either side of it, not fun.
Yeah, now I'm going to go edit a lot.
Yeah, that's the part I was talking
about. Till next time, I'm Connor. It's going to be shorter next time.
I'm Josh. Yeah. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.